Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Pat Hayden, and this is a session entitled Hospitality is Good News, an exploration into one aspect of shalom that we talked about yesterday. And you all have just had an opportunity to read a particular passage of Scripture. I'd like to say as we begin this session on hospitality that the six passages that I have chosen up here on the board today are just representative of the stories of hospitality in the Bible. If you start to read through the Old and the New Testament, you will find many, many, many stories of hospitality. But these I've selected for us to take a closer look at, because I think if we lift up some of the common ideas and parts that we can put together a reasonably clear picture of what hospitality is, who the stranger is, and to see the biblical attitude towards both the stranger and hospitality. Then I hope we can take a look at some of our own attitudes, especially right now in our own country, about hospitality and strangers, and then see if we can't put these two ideas together and see what God would do with them, how God might transform them so that we have both in the biblical story and in our own story a personal experience of shalom and a way of living toward the vision we spoke about yesterday, the shalom vision of wholeness, harmony, physical, social, and spiritual for all of creation. So with that as our goal, let us take a look at the first story, Genesis chapter 18, verses 1 to 19. Who is the host in this story in Genesis?
Abraham.
Abraham is the host. And who are the guests in this story?
The Lord.
The Lord.
Trinity.
The Lord, the Trinity. There are three strangers at the Oaks of Mamre. Does Abraham know it's the Lord?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because he says, "My Lord."
Yeah, but does he know it's the Lord Yahweh?
I don't think so.
At the beginning of the story.
No.
Okay.
He knew he was somebody very important, though, because he immediately said, "My Lord, if I have found favor in your sight," and then he rushes out to get all the very best. I'm sure they didn't have cakes and calf and curds and everything every day. So this was a very important group who had come.
Okay. Who initiates the hospitality? You've anticipated my question.
Abraham.
Abraham initiates the hospitality to these three strangers. Who are where? Are they coming to see Abraham specifically?
Yes.
They are on their way, but they made a specific stop.
Okay. They're on their way. They are passing through, but
they
stopped to...
Sojourners.
Yes, they're sojourners, but they stop to see Abraham. And what does Abraham do? How does he stop them as they're on their way?
He goes to meet them and offers them water, which is the custom of the country, to refresh them and to wash their dusty feet.
Right. He runs out to stop the strangers on their journey and offers them water. Remember, they were living in a desert, so this was an act of hospitality. And then what does he do?
He kills the calf.
His wife makes cakes.
He invites them into his home and puts on the royal spread, doesn't he? Cakes and bread and fatted calf, the whole thing. Okay, what happens as a result of this hospitality?
They appreciate.
The Lord promises them an heir.
I think the fact that he recognized that Sarah wasn't there and said, "Where is Sarah?" is important to many of us.
Yes.
That she was part of this group and that she was part of his plan for being there.
Exactly. Sarah is in the kitchen, so to speak.
Behind the tent listening.
Behind the tent listening. But the strangers ask for Sarah, too, and make reference to Sarah in their conversation. But what does happen is that these strangers who have just been passing by announce the promise of a son to Abraham and to Sarah, who is not just any old son, but is Isaac, right? Isaac, who is the founder of the people of Israel, right? The firstborn of the people of Israel. My question is, did Abraham and Sarah expect this?
No.
How old were they when
this?
90s. Abraham was over 100, and Sarah was in her 90s. Right? So this was not something that they expected.
She giggled,
yeah. And the strangers caught her at giggling and said, "Why are you laughing?"
Also part of the hospitality was when they left, he didn't just say goodbye at the door. He walked with them a ways.
Very important point. Abraham did not just take them to the door and say, "So long, see you later," but he walked with them as they started on their journey.
I think that had to do something with hospitality, but was belief, too. There was a lot of question at, you know, how could this happen at their age? But the Lord had said, you know, "Is this too hard for me?" And she said, no, I'm afraid. But I think belief came into the picture there.
Belief, and there's also this element of fear, right? This element of disbelief and fear in the story. Okay, let's go on and take a look at Joshua 2, 1 to 24. Who is this the story of? Who's the host or hostess, we should properly say, in this story?
Rahab.
And who is Rahab?
Harlot.
What's our term for a harlot?
Prostitute.
Right. She's a lady of the streets. And who are the guests in this story?
Two spies.
And where are they from?
Israel.
They're from Joshua's army. And what are they doing in their spying? What are they trying to find out? Okay, if they can conquer the land. Who initiates the hospitality there?
Rahab
does, their hostess. And what does she do? Okay, she invites them in first, and then she hides them, somebody said. Is that right? Where does she hide them? Up on a roof. And why does she have to hide them?
Because the king is out looking for them. Says he wants them. Yeah.
Okay, the king of the country that she's a citizen of has comes to her house, or sends servants to her house and says, "Where are these spies? We know they came to your house." What does Rahab do? Pardon me?
They left down the wall.
That's right. She tells them that they did come, but they've gone that away. And so she sends them after the spies, apparently. And then what happens?
When they escape over the wall.
Okay, but before they escape over the wall, do they have a conversation with Rahab?
Yes.
Okay, and what do? There are a couple of parts of this conversation. What is the first thing they talk about?
They strike up a bargain that now she was saved, so if anything happens. But they were saved. If anything happened, she wanted to be saved along with her family.
Okay, why does she need to be saved along with her family?
She knows the land is going to be taken by these people.
Okay, Rahab gives them some information, these two spies, which is usually what spies are looking for, about the condition of the land that they've come to visit. She tells them that people are very frightened of them and that they are going to be able to take the land of Jericho, in this case, quite easily. And then she strikes up a bargain that since she has protected them at the risk of her own life, she asks them to protect her and her father and mother and all of her father's family when they come to besiege the city. And what do they give her any kind of a sign or token of this?
Red fist.
Okay, they tell her that if she will stay in her house and tie a scarlet cord around her window, that anybody who's in that house will be safe and protected during the time of the attack on the city of Jericho. Okay, and then what happens in this story?
They are saved.
Okay, what happens to the rest of the city?
It's destroyed.
It's destroyed. Utterly destroyed. They burn it, they kill everybody, they destroy everything. Only Rahab and her family are saved. And who is Rahab in the history of...
She's in the lineage of Jesus.
That's right. She becomes part, then, of the lineage of Jesus, the whole story of salvation leading up to the Messiah. Good. Okay, let's go on to 1 Kings. What's the story there? Who's the host or hostess?
Widow and her son.
Okay, so there's two. There's a widow and her son. And who is the guest?
Elijah.
Elijah the prophet. And who initiates the hospitality in this case?
I would say Elijah.
Elijah initiates the hospitality. Right. And what does he ask for?
Cakes of bread.
Okay, what's the first thing he asks for? He asks for a drink of water, and then he asks for something to eat, right? And what does the widow respond to him?
She says she doesn't have enough. We need it for ourselves.
That's right. She doesn't have enough for her own family. Why doesn't she have enough?
The famine.
There's a famine in the land, and no one has enough. She has enough, it says in the story, for one more meal, and then she and her son were preparing to die. Right? What does Elijah ask of her? He asks her to go and make up the little bit of meal and the little bit of oil that she has left and give it to him anyway, and he promises her that if she does this, she and her family will have enough to eat until the rains come, which means until the famine is over. And then what happens? Elijah is staying with him. Is that the end of the story?
No, he eats it, and then the kid dies.
The kid dies, right. Her son dies. And just a sidelight here about society in Israel. It was, as we learned from Larry on Monday and Tuesday, a very patriarchal society. And a widow was in a very difficult position anyway in Israeli society because she had no one to act for her or speak for her or protect her. But she did have her son. But if she lost her son, then she was completely excluded from the Israeli community. She had no standing at all. She became an outcast, a pariah, no way to be engaged in social communication with the rest of her community or commercial connection. She therefore had no way to be related or to be able to get food to eat. She was utterly defenseless. What happens then? What does she say to Elijah when this happens?
This is how you reward me for fixing me the cake from the house.
Right. She is very angry. And very resentful and very distressed. What happens then?
Elijah throws himself over his body 3 times and God hears and breathes life back into him.
Right. Elijah petitions the Lord and the Lord grants Elijah's request and the son comes back to life. And does the widow expect this?
She didn't, but it seems like she requires great faith through this.
She acquires great faith through this. That's true. She does. She does. Okay, let's go on and look at Luke. Move into the New Testament and look at the 14th chapter of Luke, the 12th to the 24th verses. Who is the host in this story?
The banquet. It's the man who gave the banquet.
Right. It's a man who gave the banquet, or in some translations, a householder, which is a nice neutral term that can be either a man or a woman, but whoever has a home. And they are giving a banquet. Is it a big banquet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And who are the guests?
Well, first, the friends, brothers, and kinsmen. But then it also says to bring in the poor and the maimed and blind and lame.
Okay, the first guests invited are those who are very much like the host, aren't they? The kins, the brothers, the friends. But what happens? Can they come to the banquet?
They're too busy.
Yeah.
They're too busy.
Yeah.
They're too busy to come to the banquet. They send all kinds of excuses. So then what happens? Who gets invited?
All of the people, all the servants in the fields, mm-hmm. and all the people who normally would never be invited.
All the people who would normally never be invited. The blind, the lame, the maimed, the poor. Not only... from the fields, but also from beyond the streets of the city. It says the householder tells his servant to go out and compel people to come in, to just insist that there's enough of this banquet that they should come in.
These are the type of people who are not expected to reciprocate in any way.
That's right. These are people who have no capacity to give a banquet on their own. Right. Okay. And it is a banquet. That's the kind of hospitality that is provided. A lot of food and apparently enough for everyone. What happens as a result of this banquet? Sort of said it already, but what does it say? What is the result of this invitation to the banquet?
Well, it stops before the banquet evolves, but it's just that the servants said it was done, that they invited these people.
Okay,
it
but
get into the banquet.
Do the people who were originally invited, are they going to be beneficiaries of this situation in any way?
No.
No. Who's going to
taste of the banquet?
They shall not taste of the banquet. Who's to benefit from the banquet?
The poor.
All those who've been invited on the second round, as it were, those who are outside and who cannot pay back again. Okay, let's go on and look at Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. What is this the story of? Is it a familiar story?
Yes.
Very familiar story. This is the story of the road to Emmaus. Who is the host in this story?
Cleopas and his friend.
Cleopas and his friend. Okay. And who is the guest?
Jesus.
Do they know it's Jesus?
No.
Okay, they don't have any idea. What is the story? Tell us the story again. What's happening?
Well, Cleopas and his friend are walking to Emmaus, and they're discussing the death of this man, of Jesus, and they're sad about it. Jesus catches up with them and asks them what they're talking about, and they're kind of astounded that he doesn't know what's going on. They said, "Are you the only one that doesn't know what happened?" And they continue walking, and they describe the story that the women went and they discovered the tomb was empty, but they still weren't satisfied. They sent somebody else to verify that. So they're telling all this to Jesus. Yeah. And then as they come to their place, they ask him to stay. He would have continued on to Jerusalem, but they were 7 miles, and he's encouraging them. They constrained him to stay.
Okay.
They said it was towards evening.
It was towards evening, and so they ask him to stop and stay with them for the night. And he accepts, right? And then what happens? What hospitality is provided beyond this invitation to stop
and spend
the bread?
He ate with them. And what happens in the eating?
Jesus broke the bread and blessed
it. And he disappeared.
And their eyes were opened.
Their eyes were opened.
And they recognized who the guest was.
And they recognized who the guest was. And then what did they do?
They left for Jerusalem.
They
told all their friends.
Yes, they left and went back to Jerusalem to tell everyone that they had seen the risen Lord, that he had walked with them and talked with them and broken bread with them, and that they had seen the risen Lord.
They have 20/20 hindsight.
Don't we all?
Well, it's interesting how they were still walking on the road and they were talking to Jesus about what had taken place in Jerusalem, and they couldn't understand the whole gist of it. And then he says to them, "O foolish men and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, was it not necessary for Christ to suffer these things and enter into his glory?" And then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures as the things concerning himself. And they didn't recognize
him. Mm-hmm. That's quite an extraordinary thing for a guest to do, isn't it? As you're a stranger, as you're walking along the road, to have that substantive a conversation. Has it ever happened to you that you've been walking along the road and had someone expound on the scriptures for you?
But they wanted to hear more because that's why they wanted him to stay, and they were still curious.
Yes, they were still curious. Let's go on to the story of Acts. What happens in the 10th chapter of Acts? Who is the host in this story? This is a couple of hospitality stories, so we need to put some pieces together here. Who's the first host in the story?
The first host. And then after he came to the Cornelius' house, the first the Lord gave him this feast of the unclean things that he...
Who did the Lord give it to?
Peter.
Okay, this is a story about Peter. And Peter is the first host, isn't he? Who are the guests that Peter receives?
He gets all these unclean things that he's supposed to take care of.
Okay, tell me the story here. What happens in this story?
Well, he was dreamy. He was hungry, so the Lord set out this blanket with all these supposedly unclean things. So that was teaching him that he should teach the others, the Gentiles, as well as the Jews.
Okay, the story is that Peter is in Joppa, and he is waiting for supper, and he goes up on the rooftop to pray. And then he has this vision, which you've described. The Lord lets down a sheet full of reptiles and animals and all kinds of other things, which to the Jewish people are unclean. And what does he ask Peter to do?
Kill and eat.
He asks Peter to kill and eat these things that are considered by the Jews unclean. And what does Peter say? No way. No way. And what's the Lord's response?
What?
What God hath cleansed. What does it say something else about creation though? What does God say there? It's maybe different in different translations. What does it say in the RSV?
It says what God has cleansed, you must not call common.
Okay. What God has cleansed, you must not call common. In some other translations, it says, what God has created, you must not call common. Okay. And while Peter is having this vision, what's happening in the story? Who's coming to see Peter?
The servants of Cornelius.
The servants of Cornelius. Okay. And who is Cornelius?
Centurion.
Okay. Which means he's a Roman. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not a Jew. Okay, so Peter has had this vision, and then the Spirit tells him that these three strangers, these three people are at the door, and they're servants of Cornelius and a soldier, right? And what does Peter do? Okay, he goes out to meet them, and then what happens?
He invites them in,
and they spend the night with Peter. Okay. And then the next morning, all four of them set off for whose house?
And some more.
That's right. Good. And some more. They're all going to Cornelius' house. And so we have a switch in the story, and Cornelius becomes the host, and Peter becomes the guest. And what hospitality, who initiates that hospitality?
Cornelius.
Okay. And what hospitality is provided? Peter. Okay, food, a place to stay, and a group of people to talk with, right? Why has Cornelius asked Peter to come?
He was commanded by an angel.
Okay, and what is it that he asks Peter?
Tell Peter that the Lord has appeared to him in a dream and asked him to seek him out, to have Peter brought to him, and that's an explanation of why Peter was sent to him.
Very good, right. Cornelius has been instructed to send for Peter to have him come and tell Cornelius, and who else?
He's left for his kinsmen and his friends and...
The whole family, the whole clan is invited to come and hear Peter talk. What happens as Peter is telling them the story of Jesus?
The Holy Spirit descends upon them.
The Holy Spirit comes to them, yes. As they are listening to Peter, the Holy Spirit comes to them. And then what happens? What is the outcome of this hospitality? They have believed and?
Were baptized.
And they were baptized. Peter baptizes them, and then he stays with them for some days, does he not? What does it say in that story specifically about a Jew going into a Roman's house?
That's a no-no.
And then some. It's not only a no-no, it is an absolute unheard of thing. It defiles a Jew to enter a Gentile's house. And it was very unusual, and the same kind of, it also defiled a Jew to have Gentiles in his or her home. So this was just an extraordinary crossing of the common social boundaries. Does anybody know what this story is in Acts? Why Luke tells it there at that point? What's so unique about this story of Peter and Cornelius?
Holy Spirit descended even upon the Gentiles.
Holy Spirit descended even upon the Gentiles. It's the first time. It's the first time in the whole community of faith that the message of Christ comes to the Gentiles and that they are accepted into the community of believers. That's the reason we're all here. If Peter and Cornelius had not had that conversation, none of us would be here. That's the very first time it happens. Okay, we've looked at six very different stories in the Old and New Testament about hospitality, but I think that there are some common threads, and I'd like to lift up some of them and have us have you agree or disagree with me whether you think they are there. The first one is that the Lord initiates all of these stories of hospitality. The Lord is the one who moves the story into place, sometimes by his own participation in it, sometimes by just sending people and having them come together. But the Lord is the initiator. Okay, the second thing that happens is that the hosts and guests are extraordinary people or very ordinary people?
Very
ordinary people. Just people going about their own everyday tasks, where they live and what they're doing. The hosts do take the initiative in almost all of the cases. Finally, even the widow takes the initiative and goes and prepares the cake for Elijah. But they are surprised, are they not? All of them, this is not an encounter that they've planned for or expected. Or looked forward to, the possible exception of the banquet story. Okay, and what else happens? Are the hosts? We've said that they are surprised. It seems to me another common idea is that the hosts begin where they are. That in most cases they're very reluctant to be hosts, or very reluctant to understand what it is that their guests are giving to them or asking of them. We looked at the story of Abraham. Sarah laughed when the strangers promised her the son of Isaac. The widow was reluctant to have Isaiah there and then very angry when her son died as a result of, it somehow appears, the prophet being there. The two persons on the road to Emmaus, Cleopas, they're very depressed and very discouraged because, don't they say in the story, we had hoped that he was the Messiah come to redeem us all. Okay, and Peter is a good kosher Jew. No, he doesn't want to kill and eat these things that the Lord gives him in the vision. As he wonderfully is throughout the scriptures being Peter, usually saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing, reminds me a lot of myself.
most of the time. I'm really glad Peter's there. But in all cases, the story begins with where people are. Not where they're not, but where they are. And it moves them, the story, the hospitality story, moves them from a closed spirit, a reluctance to participate, to what? An open spirit. In each case, the story ends with a blessing. A blessing from the Lord. Is it a blessing that's expected? Is it a blessing that you would think would happen as a result of that sharing of hospitality? No. In every single case, it is completely unexpected, a radical new life possibility for all of the people who've been in the story. Not only the hosts, but in many cases the guests too. Is the hospitality extraordinary? We said the hosts were ordinary people. What about the hospitality?
Well, it probably appears though with the peasants and the workers in the field when they came to this particular banquet.
To the banquet, yes, it is. But it's stuff that we recognize as being part of what we understand to be hospitality. It's food, it's drink, it's inviting someone in, giving them a place to stay. It's water for their feet, it's rest. It's conversation, it's refreshment, it's very ordinary kinds of activities that we would do all the time in our own kind of hospitality, I think. I think that's another thread that's very common throughout all of the stories of hospitality, that it's very practical and concrete and very ordinary, very common. It's not difficult. And the thing that I like about all of these stories is that while we have the extravagance of the banquet in Luke, and the extravagance of the entertainment that Abraham provides the three strangers, we also have in the story of the widow and Elijah very little. She shares with the prophet what she has, and it's not very much. But in the presence of the Lord's blessing, it becomes enough for herself and for the prophet, not only for that meal, but until the famine ends. And that's, again, that's a common thread. People share what they have. It's not that they share more than they have, it's they share what they have with the guest.
That's both the secret, is the willingness to pitch. They're willing to give them what they have.
That's right. Their willingness to share what they have, that they move from a closed spirit to an open spirit. When we talk about this too, all the people who come together in these hospitality stories, do they know one another?
No.
They are all strangers. At the beginning of these stories, there's nobody who knows anybody else. I mean, the guests don't know the host, and the host doesn't know the guest. What is their relationship at the end of the story, in all cases? Okay, they are friends. Yes?
Along with the willingness to serve, with the willingness to go out into the strange places and serve the Lord.
Okay, their willingness to go out into the strange places, but their also willingness to be open to the presence of the Lord in the ordinary places where they live. The widow didn't go out, it was Elijah who came to her. Yeah. Abraham was living where he was living. You know, he didn't go out. It is true that that Cleopas and his friend were on the road, but it's unclear whether they were going home again after having been in Jerusalem for all of these events. So it is a willingness to go out to where the Lord is, but it's also the common element is that people are living where they live out their ordinary daily lives. Yes.
I say, isn't that really a result of the divine law of sharing what happens?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think that's one of the aspects of shalom, is sharing what you have where you live. The guests in all of these cases are also very special in that they all bear gifts to their hosts. While the hosts provide them hospitality, the guests also give something back to the host. In the case of the great banquet,
They give him people to eat all of his wonderful food. They create a community, right? Which he wouldn't have had if they had not come. So those are some of the common ideas that we see there.
I thought the one where the two met Jesus on the way to Emmaus, one of the results of that is that we know that Christ is always there. We just don't always recognize his presence.
Mm-hmm. But we don't always recognize his presence, but we do recognize his presence in what kind of activity? This story tells us.
How in the services of the hospitality and in the contact between them.
Right. In the contact between them, in the service of hospitality. That's always struck me, that if Cleopas and his friend had not said stay, they would never have known it was Jesus, would they? No. They initiated the hospitality by inviting a stranger to come in and spend the night. Now, this all, I think, is very exciting and very interesting, but then you come to our own life and it brings some other very important things, I think, to bear. We have to understand that in the biblical times, in the Old and the New Testament, there were no Howard Johnsons. There were no motels and restaurants such as we have, that the whole hospitality was a way of doing many important things. It was a way of receiving news. If you were staying in one place, you got news about what was going on in the world from people who came traveling by, and you found out from them. It was also very important religiously to the people of Israel to provide hospitality, because in Deuteronomy it says, remember that once you were strangers and sojourners in the land of Egypt. The injunction to provide hospitality to the stranger comes from a memory that they all have, that they were strangers and sojourners, that they live in Israel as citizens of the land of promise, that it was a gift from the Lord. It was not something that they got by their own work and design. This is very different, I think, from our attitude today. We have, Walter Brueggemann, I mentioned yesterday, says that we have a very different notion of the land and our place in it, that we really don't regard ourselves as strangers and sojourners, that we consider ourselves to be settlers. We came and we settled on the land. And we have a concept of ownership. We own the land, we own the house, we own our food, that it's ownership, and that it's really very difficult for us to see ourselves as strangers and sojourners, although this is the biblical picture that we are given. I think also we have an expectation that hospitality in our life needs to be extraordinary. When somebody comes, you don't just serve them the soup and salad that you might be having for lunch, but you fix something special in many cases. At least I know that I've done that. No, and sometimes I've gotten myself into trouble because I've tried to do and serve and be more than I had. And when the guests came, they ended up being exhausted, and so did I because of all that I tried to do for them. I didn't share with them what I had and what I was doing, the space and the time that was available both to me and to them to just go and come.
They call you Martha.
Yes, they call Martha. And I think sometimes we do this, that we try to provide hospitality beyond our means and give things rather than giving ourselves. At least I know that I've done that in the past. There also, I think, is in our culture today especially a great fear of the stranger. We are very much afraid of the stranger, and we show this in many, many ways. We assume that the stranger is a potential source of danger. We lock our doors, we lock our cars, We are concerned about law and order. We have all kinds of things which protect us from strangers. We insist that a stranger prove he or she is trustworthy before we will enter into a relationship with them. The stranger really is a potential enemy, and that, I think, is a very common attitude that we have towards people who are strangers to us. Not only the people you might expect who would be strangers, people from other races who dress differently, who are other colors, other religions, but also just people that we don't know. And it's my experience that we live more and more in an age where we meet people who are strangers to us, not people we know, but we are constantly encountering strangers. And finally, I don't know about you all, but I know that very often I'm completely preoccupied with what's going on in my own life or what I'm thinking about, and that even if there is a stranger that's close to me, I don't have any mental or spiritual or physical room to respond to that person. My mind is so absorbed with all of the things that I'm thinking about that there's no way for that person to come and enter, that I'm really closed and can't and don't have any freedom or space to be open to anyone else. I think these are not, some of them are not attitudes that are just unique to our time. I think they also were attitudes that show up in some of our stories. And what is exciting to me is that what happens in each one of these stories is a transformation of the life of the host. That when we can look beyond our fear and become vulnerable, when we can reach out and personally extend the hospitality with what we have, who we are, and where we are, to the strangers that God initiates in our life around us, then there is the possibility of something really extraordinary happening to us. That it is God's gift that brings the stranger to us. It is God's gift that has given us our lives and where we are and what we can share. And that in the process of hospitality, we have this reunion, this recreation of shalom, this overcoming of the barriers and the brokenness which existed before. Does this sound like a common thread in those biblical stories? Have any of you ever had that sort of experience of being a stranger and being received as a guest, or being a host and being open to someone who was unknown to you?
A few times.
A few times? We have actually the experience of that at Holden, don't we? We all come to Holden as what?
Strangers.
We don't know each other. What's the first thing that happens when we get here off the boat?
They greet you.
They greet you. What's the second thing that happens?
They invite you in.
You get a meal. They invite you in and you get a meal. What happens then?
Fellowship.
You get a place to stay.
You get a place to stay. You get fellowship. Are those extraordinary things?
No.
Yes, they are. They are extraordinary things. Are they the things that we see in these biblical stories of hospitality? Mm-hmm. What happens in our engagement with each other at Holden?
Fellowship.
The Lord's in the center here.
The Lord's in the center, and our lives, individually and sometimes corporately, are transformed, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do we leave Holden the same people that we come?
No.
I don't know about you, but I never have. I never have at all.
But isn't this different in that everybody has something in common in that they have a church affiliation, and you don't have that fear of a stranger that you would have if everybody came off the street from a different city, Chicago, New York, or wherever, and they all came together here. We wouldn't have, even though we were in this setting, we wouldn't have that trust.
Yes, but it's the, we don't know that when we come together. We are the same people who are on all those streets in Chicago and Minneapolis and Seattle, right? I mean, there are no signs that we wear that say that we're all Christians. Yes, I know. Everybody here is. Yeah, everybody who comes here is a Christian.
So are they when they go to church?
And so that's special too. But don't we continue to be Christians when we live where we live?
In your analogy, your example here, maybe a better point would be the hiker that comes in and ends up staying for 7 weeks, who's welcome to that degree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is a good example here. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that although we come here as Christians, part of what happens when we are in Holden is a trust that the Lord is present here, a trust in one another that allows us to be open to each other, to be influenced. We give up, at least for a short time, our preoccupations sometimes. Sometimes we have to struggle with those even when we're here. But we do have an openness here. We do have a willingness to be vulnerable, to be able to learn from and share with other people.
Fortunately, I don't know of no circumstance that indicate that it should be any otherwise. Otherwise, why would you leave purses, cameras, things, never think about it?
That's
you
right.
Didn't go anything else to think anything about that. Okay. And you made a comment that's really unfortunate about the United States. Maybe that's true of all countries, but why would attitude toward the stranger? So many things that happen, and they're happening not just in the big cities, they're happening in the small towns. It's not just Washington or New York, it's from Florida to Maine.
That's true.
I wish there were a good answer for it, but I don't know what it is. But well, until that changes, I think we're going to be that way.
Okay.
And I think before it changes, I think it's going to get worse.
Well, I think that's true. And I guess this is what I'd like to say, is I think that hospitality as a picture of God's good news to us runs right in the face of what we are experiencing in our society. That it is a radical call to us to be the changers of that experience that we find outside of Holden Village. That part of the reason we have the attitude towards strangers that we do outside is that we are fearful and we don't open ourselves up. And to the extent that we're unwilling to be vulnerable, we continue to encourage the fear and continue to encourage the insecurity. Sometimes when we're vulnerable, we find all kinds of wonderful things that happen. One story was told when I did this hospitality Bible study in 77 of a woman who's in her 80s who lives near the University District in Seattle. She walks wherever she goes many times at night, and she's been mugged so often that she carries a note in her purse. Her purse has been snatched many, many times, and she carries a note in her purse, and this is what the note says: "Dear person who has taken my purse, you must be hungry. You must need money. This is my name. This is my phone number. Please call me if I can help you. I love you." Now, I'd just like to ask you, is that woman living from a vision of shalom, from a vision of overcoming all of the barriers which we create?
Did anyone ever respond?
Yes, many people have responded. And though I have to take this back, though her purse has been snatched, she herself has never been harmed. And her purse has always been returned to her.
Is she or who?
That the woman didn't say. But what I'm suggesting is that we as Christians are called to live from a vision that we talked about yesterday of the wholeness of creation, of the harmony, the well-being, socially, physically, and spiritually of the world.
We're not called to live from the vision of the brokenness, which is the fear and the discord and the separations. When I think of these hospitality stories, they are multicultural stories. They are stories of people who really come from very different places and encounter each other. The widow and Elijah, the prostitute Rahab is from Jericho. She's not a member of the people of Israel until she marries into the family and becomes part of the lineage of Jesus. They are people who are very different from us. Peter and Cornelius, very different from each other. The story of the great banquet. The people who are blind and lame and maimed and poor, are they this way because they chose to be that way? No. Those are all conditions that happened to them, but that they didn't have any control over, that were really givens. And yet the barriers are broken down, and all of us are to be included in God's vision of shalom. None of those barriers counts where Jesus Christ is concerned. And I guess I would just encourage you to think about the idea of hospitality in your own life with the gifts that you have, where you are, to consider the possibility of being vulnerable to the person who's a stranger, and possibly thereby being the recipient of a great blessing of God. Henry Nouwen has written a book which includes a section called From Hostility to Hospitality, which was one of the things that started me thinking about this idea. And he says, hospitality is not just an important virtue, but a way guests and hosts reveal most precious gifts to each other and bring new life to each other.
Which of his books is that, Pat?
Leo, I knew you were going to ask me that question. I went to the bookstore and looked, and it's not over there. So I can't remember what the name of it is, but I will find it and post it on the bulletin board so anybody who's interested can copy it down. Are there any stories you'd like to share about hospitality in your own life? Has this been an experience that you've had?
I'd like to share a story.
Okay.
I was hitchhiking back.
Louder, please.
8 years ago, I was up here with my family, and I was tooling around the West Coast afterwards, and I was hitchhiking back to Minnesota. And it was like 10 o'clock at night, and I was sitting in Missoula on the freeway, and no one had stopped in the last 3 hours, and some young man stopped and picked me up. And he was going 2 miles out in the country, and then he had a little teepee set up 2 miles off the road, and he invited me to come out with him. And we hiked out to this little teepee in the woods, just straight out of one of these man returns to nature stories. He had his deerskin rug and his little hawk out in the sweat lodge. I don't know, for me it was just a very thrilling experience. Someone had cared for me, and it was quite a surprise. I had been prepared to be standing there all night.
So you were taken in by somebody who was very different,
mm-hmm.
and received with warmth and hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good story. I think all of us have those stories in our lives, if we'll reflect on them. Well, I hear the bell for coffee, so thank you all very much.